Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you for listening here on another Sunday. Today, a really interesting show that I felt the need to share after reading this book, Haunted Charlottesville and Surrounding Counties. The author with us today, Susan Schwartz. Susan, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, although I must say a touch frightened.
Oh my gosh, why?
Well, because I read your book. I mean, it's, I won't say I've been ghost hunting, but you know, as a teenager, you hear about, and you want a nice place to go drinking beer when you're not of age. You go to where? You go to the cornfields, or you go to the railroad tracks, or you go to the old house. But you actually went to old homes, to ghost places all throughout Charlottesville and a lot of different counties. I've got Madison, Culpeper, Orange, Nelson, Louisa, Fluvanna, Goochland, and others, not just gathering stories, but in some of these really, really hunting ghosts. And then you got this great book.
Oh, thank you.
Why would you do that?
I kind of got into it by accident. A friend of mine in Richmond, her name is Pamela Kinney. She was writing a lot of ghost books, Haunted Richmond, Haunted Virginia. And she told me since I lived in Goochland, I should do Charlottesville and the surrounding areas. So that's how this book came about. We went, my first, I guess, initiation into it was my dad was alive. We went over to Cold Harbor Cemetery in Mechanicsville, Virginia. We had heard it was a Civil War spot. They had seen soldiers there, heard cannon fire. And so we wanted to go over and just check out the cemetery and see what it was all about. And we got over there and got some pictures, iffy. Could have been, could have not been. But it was still an interesting place. And I remember one thing that really happened to me that was kind of neat. I think it's in the book, in fact. We had gone to the back part of the cemetery, and there are some graves back there that are covered with debris, trash, and some other stuff. So I had gone to... I kind of call myself the cleaner of the cemetery. I like to go through and upright pots and fix flowers because, you know, they can't do it themselves.
Now, where is this?
This is in Mechanicsville.
Okay, but at which space?
Which space?
I mean, you're in Mechanicsville, but you're at which?
Oh, Cold Harbor Cemetery.
Cold Harbor Cemetery.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
So we went there and we did that and found the graves, and one grave was just covered. So I had bent over to straighten it out and kind of got froze there for a second. I got really cold, got really chilled. And my dad and Pam were still talking, but I couldn't speak. I was just kind of frozen. And after about 2 minutes, which really seemed like an eternity to me, but after about 2 minutes, I stood back up and they said, "What's wrong with you?" And I said, "I just got really cold. I couldn't move." And Pam said, "It's probably a ghost just walked through you." So that was kind of my first initiation in learning about ghosts and how they work. It was more interesting than frightening, you know, than anything.
That's an interesting story. So at Cold Harbor Cemetery in Mechanicsville?
Yes, sir.
Now, that was... You didn't go there looking for a ghost. You just went there.
We just went to see the cemetery. My dad and me love to just go through old cemeteries. We love the stones and the ornateness, the prettiness of it, which a lot of people wouldn't say in reference to a cemetery. But I just like the quiet nature of them myself. And so we were out just looking for something to do that day. And Pam called and I said, "Let's go over and check the cemetery out." And, you know, Daddy was all for it. So we went over and had a good time. So, yeah, just looking around. And I think it's the one where Arthur Ashe is buried over there. So if that gives you a frame of reference.
Interesting. Again, our guest today, Susan Schwartz. We're talking about ghosts and ghost hunting. She is the author of Haunted Charlottesville and Surrounding Counties. The book is available from Schiff Publishing. It just came out this year?
It's Schiffer Publishing.
Schiffer Publishing.
And it came out, it was released in May of this year, yes.
Yeah. It's full of pictures as well. You've got a variety of photos, and some of them, you've got circles around trying to determine whether or not that's a ghost that's or something to see, whether or not that's some imagery that might be related to ghosts. How do you do that?
Well, my brother, who's listed there, Cliff Middlebrook Jr., he did all my pictures for me. And what we did was we'd go through and we'd go to each location, take the pictures. I always take pictures of like windows, mirrors, and stuff like that because you can sometimes find something in those. So we went through and we'd look at each picture. And then we'd look at it and say, okay, well, can we explain this in any other way? Is it a reflection of light? Is it a refraction from the camera? Is it trees reflecting on the window? We came up, I think there are 7 or 8 in the book that actually show images. We chose those specific ones because they had images in them that we could not explain what they were. Whether it wasn't a reflection, it wasn't a refraction, it wasn't trees on the window. It was just something there. There's a book, in fact, there's one in there I took myself that he helped me enhance a little bit, of a little boy at Fine Creek Baptist Church in Powhatan. And he's a little hard to see, but you can see, you can make him out, his little head, little eyes, little shirt, pants. And that's kind of what keeps me interested, is finding these things in the pictures, or, you know, going there and actually getting, well, I sometimes get pushes and pulls, not always, but sometimes. And that's kind of what leads me into it, where they are.
And what, I mean, do you talk to other people? I mean, is there some sort of organization, some sort of group that gathers to talk about ghosts?
There's a bunch in Virginia. There's Paranormal World Seekers. There's a Paranormal Virginia. There's a bunch of groups out there that, you know, study this. But I'm not a member of any of them. I just kind of weird in my own way, I guess. And I just kind of, you know, join if I can. And if I can't, I kind of do my own thing. So
you get your brother to go with you. How does he go? Why does he go?
He takes my pictures. He's a photographer.
Right. But I mean, he goes to take the photos, mm-hmm. but is he going because he's interested in ghosts?
I don't think he was at first. I think for him, it was more history. The first place we went to for this book was Tuckahoe Plantation in Richmond, or Goochland, I guess. And he was really fascinated with the history of the place and how it all coincided with Thomas Jefferson and his family. And I think as we made this journey through to the end of the book, he started to see, especially in the images we found in pictures that we could not explain. He would be looking at me going, I can't explain that. That's weird, but that's interesting. So I think at the beginning it was more, oh, I'm going to take pictures and check out the history. But I think as we got toward the ending and writing, you know, getting the book published, he was more like more interested in what was going on in everything, as opposed to just, you know, at the beginning.
Let's talk about one or two of the places.
Sure.
If we can. And since we are here in Charlottesville at WPVC 94.7, let's start in Charlottesville, Albemarle, if we can. Certainly University of Virginia, a big key part. Mm-hmm. So let's start here. Tell us about some of your stories around university.
University of Virginia was a fascinating place for me because I'm a big Poe fan, and, you know, he's got a little, his room over there, number 13 on the West Range, is kind of glassed in, but you can still see where he stayed while he was here as a student, so that was really fascinating for me. As far as hauntings, they have the Alderman Library, which is named after Edwin Alderman, who was the first president of UVA, And what had happened was they had, I believe, Dr. Green, Bennett Green, had a collection of medical books that he had donated, and they stayed in the Rotunda Library when it was over there. And they said as soon as they moved his books over to the Alderman Library, the new place, apparently he came with them to watch over them. The librarians say they hear footsteps. They always feel like somebody's watching them when they're going down the aisles. So it's kind of an interesting thing to either witness and, I guess, feel as you're working through your day if you work at the library. A lot of the librarians, though, didn't say a lot about it when because I was over there taking pictures one day and I stopped and asked, and they're like, no, it doesn't happen very often except for down in the lower levels. I guess there's some stacks or something
right,
down
in the stacks, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was in the stacks for a long time.
That's mainly where they say that happens at. Went to President Castine's office, which was a really nice place. I think there's a picture of that in the book as well. There's another doctor, Garnett, who also had a medical collection that he watches over as well. They say they've seen a few shadows in that room, or sometimes they'll hear noises that they can't explain. And then as far as the college itself, Pavilion 10 was a big one where a history professor had his family come and visit him and stay with him at the college, and said his mother-in-law woke up one night to find a man dressed in 1800 period clothing standing right beside her bed, which I thought was kind of interesting. Can you imagine waking up and seeing somebody standing there going, oh? So those are just some of the stuff. And then the last place I went to was with the anatomical laboratory, which is what they call Stiff Hall over there.
Stiff Hall.
STIFF, Stiff Hall. It's kind of the nickname of the place. And it's where they do the, I don't say autopsies, but it's where they do the medical students do their work, you know, to learn the anatomy and physiology. And they said they've had different kinds of noises down there they can't explain. They have lights that turn on and off by themselves. One thing I read said that one of the managers down there had turned off all the lights one night and then gone back, and they were all back on again. And nobody knows. Nobody was there. Nobody can explain what happened. So it's just those weird little things that kind of pique your interest, I guess.
Another one of the spots in Charlottesville that I found interesting, you had Trax Nightclub.
Mm-hmm.
For those of us who've been around for a while, might remember Trax Haunted. Tell us
Dave
that
Matthew.
Story.
Oh, sorry. I think it's Dave Matthews got his start there. They used to play there. Trax was, of course, I went looking for it but couldn't find it. I discovered it had been torn down. I think it was in 2012, if I'm not mistaken. But what had happened there was a little girl who apparently liked to show up and walk through the club, and she would go to the front door and tell people the place was closed because she didn't want them to come in there. And I remember reading the thing about it, and the owner used to tell the story. He would see the little girl. She was dressed in a little green gown, but he could never be sure her feet were touching the floor. She was kind of above it a little bit, and I thought that was kind of interesting. They also say there was movement on the second floor of the building, but when they go up there, nobody would ever find anybody or anything that would cause it. Which I had gone through and asked, the UVA has a medical center on the location right now, and they haven't had anything happen since the other place had been torn down. So I was like, oh, but because I wonder what happened to the little girl, you know, where'd she go?
Susan Schwartz, our guest today, and we're talking about ghosts and ghost hunting and ghost hauntings and her book Haunted Charlottesville and surrounding counties. So the last story about Trax Nightclub, that leads me to my question about what happens to a haunted place after it's knocked down. And you were saying that with Trax, it being knocked down and that particular ghost didn't stay to haunt the next building.
Which is weird because it's usually not the building. It's usually the location,
right,
depending on what happened there. Was there a murder? Was there a horrific experience? You know, in my experience, it's usually the location. In this case, it was the building. Maybe she was attached to the building somehow or lived there in the past. I don't know. There's another place here in Charlottesville, downtown mall, Caspari. They sell like gifts and stuff right there. They're right there on the corner. Before they moved in there, it was a funeral home, which had a lot of stuff going on because, especially in the basement, you know, it's always in the basement. Shadows, noises, footsteps, that kind of thing. And I stopped and talked to the lady at Caspari. She also told me, she said, no, since we moved in, we haven't had anything happen. So I don't know how to explain that. That's kind of weird to me because it seems like in the past, all my experience has been usually it's the location. It's not the actual structure, but I don't know.
This is WPVC 94.7. Thanks for listening here on Sunday morning wake-up call. Tell us this story, because this story carries over to multiple spaces and people about the old Albemarle County Jail and Cumman Hall and the McHughes. So tell us that story.
Well, we started out with the jail. We went there for a tour, and we ran into Paul Jones, who was who actually has written a book on Sam McHugh's murder. We went there for a tour just to see the inside and what it looked like, get some pictures. Very sad place. That's all I got from it. Very sad. And we go through, I mean, some of the doors were just so heavy you couldn't even move them. And he showed us the gallows where Sam was hung back in 1904. The whole thing came about because Cumman Hall, which is over on Park Street, is where Sam and Fannie McHugh lived back in the 1900s, early 1900s. And what had happened, they had gone to church one night, and on the way back, they stopped. They spoke to Sam's uncle, and it was about 9 o'clock. And about 9:15, they saw Sam's brother Frank come running toward the house, and he apparently found him sitting at the top of the stairs. He'd been hit or something. He had bruising on his face, and he said, "Don't worry about me. Check on Fannie." And Fannie was found in the upper bathroom in a tub of water. She'd been shot, and half of one ear had been kind of cut off, so to speak. And they went looking for the person that did it, but they never found anybody but Sam himself. But they never could explain how he got home at 9 o'clock, and by 9:15 all this had transpired. So he had, they'd gone up, they'd run the bath water, he'd shot her, injured himself, called his brother, all within 15 minutes. Paul Jones's book came back and said it was actually somebody else in the house, a lady named Hattie, that Sam had been seeing on the side, and she wanted to get rid of Fannie. So she's actually the one that did the murder. And they said that when she left, she ran out the house, she was wearing men's clothing, you know, like a hat, like a, derby, I guess, and men's shirt clothing. So people would think it was a man leaving the house instead of a woman. The nice thing about the end of the story, the nice thing is he was buried at his parents' home after he was hung. After so many years, they finally put him up here in Riverview Cemetery next to Fannie. And if you go, you'll see her gravesite with her name on it. His name is not on it at all, but he's apparently buried right there beside her on the left, which I thought was a nice ending to this horrific story. But the hauntings go, Fannie apparently haunts the upper bathroom where she was murdered, and the bathtub itself was moved to the basement after so long, and Sam apparently haunts the basement, is the story. So when I was there, a lot of sadness, a lot of anguish, but that was about it.
Again, and you visited all these spaces.
Yes, sir.
And you talk about getting pulls. Mm-hmm. Did you get any pulls from old Albemarle County Jail or the hall or Riverside?
No, just a lot of sadness, a lot of anguish, a lot of I don't know what happened. So I didn't get a lot of that at all. Just real sadness.
Again, our guest today is the author of Haunted Charlottesville and Surrounding Counties, Susan Schwartz. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll ask some more questions about ghost hunting and hauntings before we get back into some of the stories. Hang tight. All right. Back with Susan Schwartz. Susan's been an avid writer for 10 years, writing about the paranormal, where she's a member of the Horror Writers Association. She's two novels in the works, a paranormal romance and a medical thriller. She loves to travel foreign lands. And as she told us earlier, traipse through old graveyards and cemeteries. How do you tell old fake photos from the ones that, you know, your brother took, you know, from real photos where you might actually be seeing a ghost?
Well, you kind of look for what you can't explain. We looked at each picture that is in the book that has the images. We looked at each picture. We try to find out, is there any refraction in it from the camera, like lights from the camera? Are there any reflections from outside, trees, cars, anything like that? Is there any other simple stuff that we can explain away? And as I said, the seven or eight in the book were just pictures that we could not explain what they were. We couldn't figure out where they came from or anything else, just images popped, and there they were. And we had no way of telling how they got there. So, and my brother, who is a big skeptic, I mean, he is a hard, fast skeptic. He even looked at some of the pictures that were in there. There's one in there from the wilderness. It's a lady in a cloak and a face out in the woods. He could not explain it at all. Because, you know, usually he'll look at a picture and go, oh, that's refraction, you know, that's camera light. But these particular ones, neither one of us could come up with an explanation.
But if you have somebody else who's taking the photos, mm-hmm. and the modern technology that people can use today, mm-hmm. to make something fake, mm-hmm. how can you, you know, and
I don't know the answer to that question because I don't have a lot of that technological experience. I myself kind of, if I see something in a picture and the place is close enough that mm-hmm. I could go, I usually will try to go and, you know, visit the place myself and see what I get. And then, you know, maybe I can come back and say, oh, well, maybe that was real. But, you know, there's no way to tell, you know, because everything, you can't believe everything you see on the internet. And who knew that? You can go and, you know, experience it for yourself, take some pictures yourself, and see what you get. I mean, that's the fun part. That was one of the things about the book I really wanted people to do, was just get out there and visit some of these places. Because not only is it full of ghosts and everything else, you have a lot of history, you have a lot of neat things happening in these different places, and they're really fun to visit, so I'm hoping it gets people out and about.
And that's one of the things, you know, we're going through, we're going to hopefully talk through a number more of them. But it won't be, even if we get through all of them, it won't be 15%. And you give the address, you list whether they're public or private, mm-hmm. Whether you need permission or whatever. It's fascinating to look through them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Can you attract a ghost? Can you tell a ghost to leave?
As far as attraction, I don't know. I know some people can do that. I don't think I'm one of them. I do know people that can attract ghosts, and you know, they have to tell them, you know, you got to stay here. You can't go home with me. My thing is, when I go to a place, as soon as I walk out the door, I'll kind of look back and say, you got to stay here. You can't come home with me. And that's worked for me so far. So, but I don't think, I don't know that I attract them. I think I just kind of can, I just weird in a way that I can tell you if something's there. I can't tell you who it is or what it is, but I can tell you if something's there. And that is, that's about the extent of what I can do.
But you talk about not taking it home with you. Mm-hmm. What about when you walk into the room? Who has the, if you walk into a room mm-hmm. that a ghost or the space mm-hmm. that the ghost is usually there,
mm-hmm.
how do you, who has, I'll use the word power,
mm-hmm.
how do you keep the power over the ghost?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think of it that way. I'm trying to think of a good place to tell you. Exchange Hotel is a good place to
ooh,
to do.
Yes, let's talk about Exchange Hotel, which is in Orange County.
Yes, when I first
that was a very long chapter or a very long.
We did a ghost
number
hunt there.
Of pages, yeah.
But the first time I ever went there, I went as soon as I stepped inside the door. I got immediate cold feeling. I got pushed. Pulled. I was all over the place, and I finally went to the desk in the gift shop there, and I asked the lady there, you know, is this place haunted? And she goes, why would you think that? And I told her, I said, I've got all these cold chills, and I said, I'm being pulled over here and pushed over there. And she goes, yes, there's a number of spirits here. So I think I don't know that, you know, you can have control over them. I think some of them, there's another one in Graffiti House, Michael Bowman. You go up to the top of the stairs to get to his room, he'll poke you or pinch you. I was on a tour there, and two ladies came back down with me, and they were talking about it. She goes, yeah, when I got to the top of the stairs, I felt this big pinch. Apparently, he likes to flirt with the women. I don't know. But there's, you know, back at, and I'm jumping back and forth here, so I apologize for that. But back at the Exchange Hotel, there's a major over in the kitchen house that will push you down the stairs if you don't watch him. Several people have said they've been, what's the word I'm looking for? Pushed, you know, back down the stairs. They had to grab hold to the rail to not fall. So I don't think we actually have control over them, because I think they can do what they want. So I kind of look at it as being another person and just humoring their specific personalities.
Let's talk about Exchange Hotel.
Okay.
Because, you know, if each story in your book, and I'll say that the book has 170 pages
mm-hmm.
Worth of each one is about 2 pages per mm-hmm. space. Exchange Hotel was probably 8.
Yes. It was a very fascinating experience.
Yeah. So talk about Exchange Hotel, Orange County.
Okay. Exchange Hotel. It was a place in the Civil War where people would actually exchange trains from going to Richmond, Charlottesville, wherever they were going. And they would stay here. They could stay the night. They could get a cold drink while they were waiting. Hence Exchange Hotel. And then over during the Civil War, it became a hospital for both sides. I think there's still about 700 to 750 soldiers buried on the grounds that they're trying to figure out where they are and who they are to get the family back to help with upkeep and all that kind of stuff. We went there. As I said, I've been there several times. I love that place. It's just so full of history, full of ghosties and all things. But some of my good experiences there, we went there for a ghost hunt on a Friday night, and it was from 8 till midnight. And we had a lot of different experiences there. The ones that stick out, on the first floor, apparently there's a shadow man that will, if you go in the bathroom, he'll shut the door and won't let you out. That's happened to me twice. You have to ask him nicely, please let me out, and he'll let go of the door. On the second floor, there is a Dr. Bagby, his bedroom up there. He's said to haunt it. Women have to be careful going in there by themselves because apparently he likes the ladies too. Up on the third floor, there's a little girl named Emma who likes to run around the hallway. There's a one-legged soldier in one of the barracks rooms. I believe it's on the second floor. And there's a couple more, but those stick out in my mind. When we went and did the ghost hunt, we used all kinds of equipment that I've never even used before. I just take my recorder and my camera. They had this thing called a RAM pod or something to that effect. It had colored lights on it. And we took it up to the third floor for, you know, the little girl Emma. And we put it over in a corner where nobody could bother it. And we would ask her questions and it would continuously go off, you know, when she'd want to talk to us or, you know, do things. I remember one time we asked her, what's your favorite color on there? And the green would light up all by itself. It was like red, yellow, green, and blue. And she would light the green up every time we'd ask her that. I thought that was kind of neat. So that's what we did mostly there. We went over to the kitchen house. Apparently there's a mean cook over there named Anna. And she, they asked her, said, what do you do here? And she goes, I fry chicken. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And then one of the things we did while we were over there is we went and sat down in the kitchen itself, which is on the ground floor, turned all the lights off except for that ram pot thing I was just talking about, and asked questions of the spirits that were in that part of the location. And there's a little boy he's about 14, they said. His name is Cornbread. They call him Cornbread because they don't know his real name. But he apparently, back in the Civil War, he was African-American, and you were not allowed to look at a white woman. And apparently some soldiers saw him do that, and they chased him to the kitchen house there at Exchange Hotel and caught him, and they wound up hanging him there in the kitchen area. And so he haunts that particular spot. And we had conversation with him, asking him, you know, with the spirits up in the second floor, because there were two rooms up there we went to as well. And so we talked with him for a while, and then we went up to the second floor, which at the beginning of the night, we got a tour of the whole location. And it was very, this was back in, I think, February, if I remember correctly. And it was a very cold night. And what happens is when a train comes down, a real train, comes down the track, we had gone up to the second floor in the room that was the prostitute's. Her name is Olivia. And it was very cold there. And then a train started coming down the track. The temperature in the room went up visibly. You could just feel the sweat on your face. And we asked, what causes that? And she goes, well, it's all the new customers coming in from the train. So that's the room temperature went up. Next to her room, there's a major in the Army, I believe. I can't remember exactly, but it was an Army man, and he apparently had killed his wife because he thought she was cheating on him, and he haunts that room that's right beside Olivia's. So we got a lot of different things at night, and the major's also the one you have to hold the rails when you go down the steps because he'll push you down them.
It's just so much in this one space. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a very interesting space. And then, if you go outside, they have the train depot down there where they used to stack the dead bodies. And the sad part about that was they take people that were almost dead, not completely dead, if that makes sense, and they put them in there too. So I think some of them may have died of fright just being in there with the dead bodies, plus the infection and the disease and all that. And right outside the train depot, there's a huge... big tree out there. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's a big tree out there, and they use that. It's called the hanging tree. And people, I did not get this, but people have gotten shots of images hanging from the tree from where people had been hung there. So it's a very fascinating location with a lot of stuff going on, different stories, different histories. But, if you ever get a chance to visit it, you should.
I don't know that I want to.
Oh, it's so much fun. See, I it's a lot of fun. It really is.
Again, our guest today, Susan Schwartz, who's the author of Haunted Charlottesville and Surrounding Counties. Again, we're talking about Exchange Hotel, and that particular, I don't know if you qualify it as a chapter or not, but the piece on Exchange Hotel, there's part about Emma...
Emma the little girl.
Emma the little girl. the actual transcription is in there, where it says, where the recorder is turned on and everything is in the book. So it's really fascinating to read. Is there any place that you've wanted to investigate but have not yet had the opportunity?
I came up with a couple that I didn't get to go to. Dunlora Plantation here in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
Didn't get to do that one because it was a private residence, and they said, you know, they really don't like trespassers. So I honored that because they didn't want you to be there, which was fine. So I looked up the history. And it had some stories about witches living on the property, scout master that took some scouts there camping, and they all got killed. They found out later, I think, that the scout master did it, but he had gone crazy or something. I've heard stories of cars that work fine when they get on the drive to go to the house, but when they try to leave, they have trouble starting, and they won't work right again until they get to the main road. So it was something I wanted to check out, but couldn't do it, so, you know.
Now, am I going to upset you if I tell you that I've been to Dunlora?
Oh, whoa, well, do tell.
And nothing happened, but I had a friend who lived there for a year or two back in the old day before it was, you know, when it was just its old beat-up piece of property, and wasn't anything. It was just a beautiful old house where nothing unusual happened.
Well, the caretaker there, one of the things I did read about, that the caretaker there that's there now apparently has said that, you know, nothing goes on here. We don't know why people are saying this about this house. But, you know, it was in my research, so, of course, I wanted to check it out just to see for myself. But
looks creepy.
And when it's back in the woods.
It's a creepy-looking space. Mm-hmm. So I'll share that with you.
Oh, nice. I like that. Maybe one day I'll get a chance to go, but I really wanted to check that one out because it sounded so interesting. But like I said, you have to honor, and that's something I put in the book as well. You have to honor people. If they don't want you to, you know, trespass on their property, please don't. Get permission first. So.
Right. Any other place that you've wanted to go but haven't had an opportunity to visit?
Not so much here in Charlottesville.
Right.
I'm actually working on something else here for Colonial Williamsburg. There's plenty of places down there that the history and the hauntings really go hand in hand. So I'm looking forward to maybe doing that in the next couple of months.
Right.
You know, going down and investigate somewhere, a couple of those houses down in there. But for the most part, I got to do most of what I wanted to do for this book. There were a couple of places that didn't want you to, you know, and that's fine.
Right.
I did the research and found out the stories, and anything I shared, of course, was stuff that was already out there, so I didn't really tell anything, you know, that they wouldn't have wanted out. So I feel pretty good about that as well.
Another Charlottesville story is about the Inn at Court Square.
Oh, the Inn at Court Square. Yeah, that was a neat one because you can find it by, it's got this beautiful red door on the front, and it's like a two-story place. They had this porter there named John, and he would carry people's baggage up the stairs whenever they checked in. And what would happen is they had this sconce, I think it was three candle sconce on the wall, and he'd hit it every time he went up the stairs. And so he asked them to remove it. They wouldn't do it. And the owner came back, Ms. Deloach, she came back and told me that after he passed away a few years later, that one day she had felt something go by her, and the sconce and the candles, all three flew across the room. Nobody near him, nothing, but they just went flying across the room. I was like, oh, he's trying to get rid of that sconce. He didn't like it.
Again, our guest today, Susan Schwartz. She's the author of Haunted Charlottesville and Surrounding Counties, with her brother, who took all the photos, Cliff Middlebrook Jr. You can find the book at Schiffer Publishing. Just came out this year, so check it out if you get a chance. Where can people buy it?
Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Amazon.
Yeah, all the big places.
All the big ones.
It's pretty cool. So let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about a few more interesting places and go through a few more questions. Be right back. And we're back. All right. So, Susan, let's go through another spot. We talked about Exchange Hotel in Orange County, and you mentioned Wilderness, telling another story, I think, about one of the photos. So tell the story about Wilderness up in Orange County.
That was an interesting place, too. We went to see the battlefield, and when we first got there, we saw, like, trenches where the soldiers hid, you know, during the war to get down in the thing. But the neat thing was, it was a Civil War battlefield, and I think over 35,000 soldiers lost their lives there. People who live in the area still say they hear gunfire. They hear the men marching down the road, the screaming of, you know, screaming of the people dying. And this, it's a very sad place. But we went through a lot of the woods, went back and tried to see what we could get back in the back off the road, I guess you'd say. And I know we went, one place we went to is where we got a couple of pictures that were in the book, the lady in the cloak and the face out in the woods. Also got some, like, growling on my recorder, no dogs around or anything like that. Heard some backfire. I don't know what it was because it was nothing around. There was a motorcycle going down the road, but I don't think it was a backfire from the motorcycle because it would have been, seemed like it would have been a lot louder, and it was right beside me kind of on my recorder. So, we were just out just exploring in the woods, taking pictures, and just trying to listen out for different things, and just found a really neat place, very quiet, very secluded. Didn't get any feelings of sadness or anything, but I got a lot of feelings of being watched. I get that a lot when I go places. There's, in fact, there's another place that happened. Sailor's Creek, over in Amelia, they have a little, it's a hill, and you go down, there's a little river, and off the ravine is where they used to throw the dead bodies from the Civil War, and all the time I was walking around that area, I got the feeling of being watched the whole time, because I remember walking back up the hill, and I kept turning back and looking behind me, because I'm like, somebody is following me, and I could hear, like, leaves rustling, like footsteps, but nobody was ever there.
You mentioned with your recorder, mm-hmm. Do you have a special device for a recorder? Do you do anything special to record a ghost sound?
No, I just turn it on and let it go. And what I do is when I go to a location, as soon as I get out the car, I turn it on. And then when I get home, I turn it up really loud and play it back and listen out for different, you know, voices or things that I know weren't there when I was visiting the location or things that may have happened. I don't really have a special one, no. I think I spent maybe $20 on it, $20-$25 on it, just to see what I would get. The only thing that I've gotten so far in a couple places, I've gotten unexplained sounds. I've got clinking, like glasses, that kind of thing. Something that sounds like cooing from a little girl. I think Emma, I had some cooing from her. I think that's what it was. You know, just stuff like that. I didn't really buy it to really get a lot. I just wanted to see what I would get. Because I know a lot of people are all into the equipment. You got to have the EMF finder. You got to have the heat finder, the big recorder, the camera. I don't do all that. I'm just kind of simple. I take my camera, I take my little recorder, and just see what I get. It's a fun thing for me. It's not really a you know, a rigid routine I do. I just kind of go and have fun.
You're not looking for your TV show.
No, not at all.
One of the spots that you write about is your own house.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, I had three animals that passed away in the last couple of years. My dachshund, Simba, and two cats, Sandy and Mr. Imp. And for Simba, was a cute thing. One morning, I'd gotten up and I heard this racket in the hallway. And I walked out there and didn't see anything. I thought maybe the cat was caught up in something. And I found the cat. He was in the living room in a chair, fast asleep. And I heard this little, these little footsteps, for lack of a better word, running up and down the hall. I'm like, what in the world is that? And I remembered Simba loved to run up and down the hall. This is about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, you know, you need to go lay down because we're trying to sleep. I said, but you can come back and visit. And I didn't hear it anymore. And usually about once a month, it'll happen. About 2 a.m., 3 a.m., I'll get up and hear that noise up and down. Hey, Simba, how are you? Go lay down. She'll go lay down, I guess, and, you know, it'll be quiet again. So we've discovered that was her. She died when she was 15. We had her for about 15 years. So I assume she's just still hanging around and protecting the house. And then our two cats, they come. Sandy passed away in 14, I believe it was. And she will actually, she comes up, she jumps up on the bed. One night I had shut the door because we have two other cats now. I shut the door so they couldn't get in. So no animals were in the bedroom with me. And I felt something walking on the bed. And I'm like, what in the world? So I got up, turned the light on, nothing's there. And turned the light back off, went and laid back down, laying feet again. And I finally figured out it was Sandy because she liked to do that to find a nice soft spot to lay in. So I just said, you know, hey, girl, how are you? Come back and visit. And then Mr. Imp, we had him. He was about 15 as well. He was a feral. And he passed away in 16, and he comes back. He leaves a bit of his hair. We'll find like little tufts of black hair, and we know he's come to visit. So it's really nice to know that, you know, especially with pets, because they become such a part of your family. It's nice to know they come back and visit, or at least, you know, watch over you as, you know, they do, as Simba does. So Simba was a dachshund, so she stayed outside a lot. She loved to be outside. And when anybody would ever come down the driveway, you knew somebody was there because she would be barking her head off. So it's just nice that they can come back and visit.
Can you ask ghosts to return or come back who've never haunted before, like a pet? Could you, if you've lost a pet, is there a way to, you know, ask them to come back?
I don't know. I that is a good question. I've never even thought of that. I know a lot of people say that they pets that they've had for a long time, you know, 15, 16 years, that they get the inkling that they're still with them. My sister had a Labrador, in fact. Otis was his name. Beautiful dog, chocolate lab. And she swears he's still at the house with her. He passed away last year. He had a stomach issue, but she swears he's still there with her. So I don't think they ever leave. I think, like I said, they're part of the family, and I don't think they ever leave. I think they still have, especially a dog. And I don't know why I think this, but especially a dog, I think, because they're so protective of their owners. You know, that's just my thought on that.
Are you, not to get too personal, no. are you married? Do you have a partner?
Yes, married.
What is your partner think of your interest in ghosts?
He's kind of like my brother. He's a hard, fast skeptic. He doesn't, he's not one to believe it unless, you know, you've got proof, and, you know, and I understand that. I'm a skeptic myself. I mean, I've seen some stuff, I've felt some stuff, but I'm still looking for that minute proof that says, hey, there's something there. But, you know, certain times, you know, you get stuff like we have in the book that you can't explain, you kind of have to wonder, okay, well, what's going on there? So he's kind of like that. But he supports me, and he's encouraging. So I'll give him props for that. He's a good fella.
How about, let's go to Culpeper and tell me about Grassroots Restaurant.
Oh, Grassroots. I enjoy Grassroots. We went there taking pictures one day, and it was closed, so I said, I got to come back over here. So I called the owner, who, Andrew Ferlazzo, and very nice gentleman, had a very long conversation with him about his restaurant. And he told me, he said, it started off, he had stuff that would move. He said, I'd put it down on this table, and it would show up again on the other table. And he goes, nobody else was in there, so I know I didn't do it. And then he said one time he had this box that kind of moved itself across the floor. And I said, well, what'd you think? He said, I have no idea. And I said, well, I must come for a visit. So we set up a time. I went on over. and you know, met up with him, and he was busy at the time, so I went. I'd heard there was some ghost activity in the bathroom, so I went in there, took my recorder, and just kind of stood there a few minutes and said, you know, hey, if anybody's here, you know, say something or tell me something if you want to. And all I got was some clinking, like bracelets, metal bracelets. I wasn't wearing any jewelry that day, so I know it wasn't me. But most of the time in that bathroom, they hear laughing or singing, which I thought was kind of strange. So I was like, okay. And so I went on back out. He finally came out of his meeting, and we went down to the basement of the restaurant. And he does a funny thing. When he goes down the steps, he says, you know, hey, it's Andrew. I'm here to whatever he's going to do. I'm going to get drinks. I'm going to do this. Well, today he says, I'm going to show Susan around. And he says, you have to introduce yourself to the ghosts down here. Otherwise, they get mad. They throw things, apparently move things or throw things at you. And so I went down. I said, hey, I'm Susan. I'm just coming down to take some pictures. I'm not going to harm you in any way. And as I got down toward the bottom of the stairs, I got pulled to the specific spot right at the bottom of the stairs. And I asked him what it was, and he said he didn't really know, but he found out in the history of the building, there were numerous miles of tunnels and catacombs underneath the building basement there where we were. So he thought maybe it had something to do with that. And so he had to go back upstairs, so I stayed down there, took some pictures, tried to get some recording. Didn't get much of anything down there, which is weird because that's where a lot of the activity happens. And I went on, I was going to head back upstairs, and I got pulled back to that same spot again. I was like, what is this? And so I got back upstairs. I asked him about going further down, maybe down below the basement. He goes, there's no way to do that. The passages have been closed off. So I never did find out what exactly was on that spot. But got back upstairs, started talking to the head chef. I believe his name was Kevin, who would tell me about different things, you know, shadows running through the kitchen, stuff moving from place to place. And another one of the waitresses I was talking to, she said, we have cups that will turn over on their side. And that's kind of weird. And she said, yes, the weird part is just one of them. There's like four or five in each row. One of them will turn over. So I walked over and I picked up one of the cups. They are very heavy cups. I mean, somebody would have to literally pick them to turn them. And they say they come in all the time. They're turned. Plates will be spinning. You know, it's all kinds of things that go on there. It's a very interesting place. And just to put a shout out, the awesome menu too, so check it out.
Why do you think you get pulled? Is it some, I mean, is this a...
It's something I learned. I was on a ghost tour in Las Vegas, and we went out to the different spots they had on the haunted Las Vegas tour. And they gave us these dowsing rods, you know, like people used to use for water, to find water. And what would happen, they said, if a ghost is near you, they'll spin. Well, mine started spinning one. I'm like, well, okay, this is weird. And I learned, I guess I got the hang of what it felt like when it was spinning. And so what happens is, instead of using dowsing rods now, I just kind of, I guess, tune into it. And I get pushed and pulled, kind of like a magnet pulls you or pushes you away. That's the best way I know to explain it. And that's what happens. I either get pushed or pulled one way or another.
Ghost hunting tips for a beginner?
Don't go to anywhere by yourself. Take somebody with you. Even because you don't know if it's a safe place. You don't know if it's the structure's physically safe. I was out in the woods by myself one time, which I should have never done. But I got about halfway in, and I'm like, no, I shouldn't be out here by myself. So don't go by yourself ever. Take all your equipment with you that you're going to use. Take your camera, your recorder, your EMF meter, whatever you'd use. Extra batteries, always good. Make sure you dress for the season, because sometimes it gets very, very cold or very, very hot. So, and just have fun.
Signs that your house or house you weren't aware of is haunted?
Probably strange noises you can't explain. You might see shadows, shimmers of light, you know, reflections in the mirror sometimes will get you, creakings. You know, there's all kinds of haunted activity. One house had baskets that, you know, would just move back and forth by themselves, or things moving from one place to another that, you know, you didn't do or somebody else wasn't in the house at the time.
All right. Let's try and get a few more stories in here in the last few minutes that we have. Tribble Farm
was another interesting place. I had a really good time there. It entailed, the first thing we did was we walked up on the back porch, and the back door that we walked in apparently opens and closes every night about 7 o'clock. And they did some research, and they found out a gentleman lived there named Vernon that would come in about 7 o'clock every night from milking his cows and taking care of the farm. And he would come in the back door, take his boots off, and go on in the house. And that's what they attribute the door opening and shutting to at 7 o'clock, because he's still doing his ghostly labors, I guess, milking his cows and such. As you go further into the house, the hallway, there's shimmers of lights up and down that hallway. And then the kitchen, the basket I was just telling you about that moves back and forth by itself, that was in that kitchen. They were having dinner one Thanksgiving, and there were two baskets. One would move by itself, and the other one stayed perfectly still. But the neat thing about that was we went on into the living room. I got a pull toward the kitchen, and I said, well, let me finish the living room. So we went on in the living room, and in the back, which the living room leads off to the bedroom, and there's a place back there where the owner had laid her robe one time. She had just kind of thrown it over the tub. And when she came, she had to go to the kitchen to get something else. And she came back, and the robe was laid out on the bed like somebody was wearing it, which I thought was kind of interesting. The biggest thing about that house, though, was the pull I got from the kitchen door. And I kept asking her, what's behind this door? And she goes, well, let me show you. Well, the summer before that, they had pulled up the carpet, and she moved the table back. And if there's a picture of it in the book as well, there's a picture of a stain, a blood stain on the floor. It looks like a person laying there. And they went back and researched. Apparently, a soldier or another gentleman was stabbed to death in that room, and he bled out on the floor. And that's what had pulled me to that room.
That's creepy.
Yeah, that was really neat.
That's not neat. That's creepy.
Oh, for me, it was neat. And the only other thing neat about that house was when you go up the stairs, there's a lady that she dresses in Victorian garb up at the top of the stairs. It's a ghost. And you have to watch about the third or fourth step because she will push you back down the stairs. In fact, when I got up to the third step, I felt a legitimate push on my chest, like, you don't come up here. I don't want you up here. I had to grab the railing because I almost fell down the stairs. At which point I said, stop that. I'm not going to hurt you. And my brother just looked at, because he was standing beside me, goes, I'm not touching you. I'm like, no, I'm talking to the ghost. And he says, let me try that. So he went back and went up to the third stair, and he goes, I don't feel anything. I'm like, you just don't have it.
All right. About 1 minute left. So let's go out with one that Charlottesville, Albemarle folks may recognize. How about Swannanoa?
Swannanoa, very gorgeous place. It's a pretty castle up there in... I think it's right there on Afton Mountain.
Yep.
And it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous place. Very sad place, though. I didn't get a lot there. The best thing about the place is when you go in the front door and up the stairs, there's a beautiful stained glass window there that one of the owners apparently is said to have her own thing in, a picture of her in there. So if you get a chance, go. It's a very nice place to visit. And I didn't get it, like I said, I didn't get a lot there, but... it's an interesting history and place to go.
You're getting ready to write a book on a paranormal romance?
Yes.
What's that?
It's actually based in the OR, because I'm an OR nurse. So I based it in an OR. She's a witch, and she meets a wizard, and they kind of get into it. And I'm kind of in the middle of it, so I don't know how it's going to end.
All right. Susan, thank you so much for coming today. Susan Schwartz, Haunted Charlottesville and Surrounding Counties. We didn't go anywhere near as many places as there are in the book. I hope everybody can find it. Thanks to come and tell us all about as many as you did.
Oh, you're so welcome. And if I can mention, just visit my website. I have a lot of signings coming up, so Can I put that on here? www.susanschwartzauthor.com.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Take care, everybody.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SevillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.